We're in. All right. Session two, preaching like Jesus. Why do you think we should preach like Jesus? Any thoughts? I love that. If it worked for him, it works for us. There has never been more appealing and interesting preacher than Jesus, as we will look at today. And I think, you know, as you look through his 3 years of ministry and the times that he taught and the times that he preached, what we see time and time again is that crowds gather. So he was obviously doing something right. People were interested in what it was that he had to say. And there were so many positive reactions. Let me just pull out a few from the Gospels. In Matthew 7, it says, the crowds were amazed at his teaching. In Matthew 22, the crowds were profoundly impressed by his answers. In Mark 11, the people were so enthusiastic about Jesus' teaching. That's some nice encouragement. And Mark 12, the large crowd enjoyed listening to him. So there was clearly something dynamic, something exciting, something passionate about the way in which Jesus was preaching and what Jesus was preaching. And there really was no one, and never has been anyone like him. No one had ever heard anyone speaking the way Jesus spoke. They'd heard lots of teachers sharing about God and about the things of the Old Testament and teaching around things of the Bible, but no one had ever heard it put across in the way that Jesus was bringing it across. And they were just, like we've heard in those verses, they were just captivated not only by the content, but also by the delivery, which I think is really interesting. You know, there are many famous preachers. Who are your favourite preachers that you like to listen to? Who are your favourite preachers?
Charles Stanley.
Charles Stanley, others? Who do you like to listen to? Reinhard Bonnke. Yeah. Billy Graham. Yeah, really good. So actually quite a lot of this evening's session has been pulled from some teaching that Rick Warren did around this very theme. You know, I don't need to reinvent the wheel when someone like that has brought that kind of teaching. I like quite a lot of the younger American teachers, so like Judah Smith, Chad Veach, Rich Wilkerson Jr. I think they are just super like dynamic preachers, but their content is really sound. But there is a whole wealth of famous preachers, for want of a better term, but we shouldn't be imitating any of them. We should be imitating Jesus, and that's the point of this evening session. In John 12, verse 49, Jesus said, I don't speak on my own authority. The Father who sent me has commanded me what to say and how to say it. I think that's really interesting, that not only did he tell him what to say, but how to say it. So we're going to look this evening at three attributes of preaching like Jesus. And the first one is this. Three attributes of teaching, of preaching like Jesus. First, Jesus began with people's needs, hurts, and interests. So what you find as you read the Gospels and how Jesus was preaching is that his teaching would often be in response to a question or a need or something that someone in the audience was looking for. And you see that time and time again. Essentially, he was scratching where they itched. He says itching. That was going on. I didn't mean to do that, but I just had an itch. He was scratching where they itched. And he was his preaching and teaching was always relevant. And it was always on target for what the people needed in that very moment. Who knows what Jesus' first sermon was?
Sermon.
Say again?
Sermon on the Mount.
Nope.
Did he go to the Spirit of the Lord upon me?
That's the one when he rolls open Isaiah, yeah, and he reads from Isaiah. I think I've got it. Here we go. Let me read it to you. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim that the captives will be released, that the blind will see, that the oppressed will be set free, and that the time of the Lord's favor has come. So the entire emphasis of this very first kind of public speaking that Jesus did is all about meeting the needs and the hurts of the people he was going to engage with. He's got good news, like we said last week, and people want to hear that good news that he's got. And I love that he also kind of teases what will come around practical benefits. So it's not just, I have come to bring you knowledge and share with you things that God has shared with me, but actually I'm going to do something about it, like we were speaking about on Sunday as well. And what can we do about the things that God is telling us? His truth would set people free. It would bring all sorts of blessings to the lives of those who hear it. So our basic message to the lost must be good news, like we talked about last week. If it's not good news, then it's not the gospel, essentially. And the gospel, the good news of Jesus, is about what God has done for us through Christ. It's about this truth that what was about to happen was Jesus paying the price so that we can have relationship with God. It was all about the relationship between man and God. That's what Jesus was striving and driving towards. The gospel is all about forgiveness. It's about freedom. It's about security, purpose, love, acceptance, and strength. I love this. The gospel settles our past, it assures our future, and it gives meaning to the present. It settles our past, assures our future, and gives meaning to our present. That is the gospel. That is the good news of Jesus. It does these things, and it gets quite practical. So our basic message has to be good news. And then, like we've already said, crowds always flock to Jesus, and that's because he was bringing good news. People want to hear good news. There is so much bad news in the world that actually, if we started preaching bad news on a Sunday, well, why would anyone want to come to church? We can get enough of that from watching the news or reading the paper or whatever it might be. People are looking for hope. People are looking for help, and they're looking for encouragement. And Jesus understood that. I love that as you see him preaching and you see him teaching, it often says he felt compassion on those who had gathered. And so he understands their practical, physical needs. He begins with people's needs. And so we too, when we bring a message, whether that is standing on the platform and preaching, or whether it's just sharing about Jesus with our friends or our family, we've got to look to what are the needs of the people or the person we're engaging with, and begin there, because that's where Jesus began. Because when you begin with people's needs, you immediately gain the attention of the audience. So Jesus first and foremost met their needs, and then they were engaged and connected and perhaps open to hear more of what he had to say. So our basic message must be good news, because crowds flock to the good news. Wise teachers know to start with the students' interests and then move them towards the lesson. So this is essentially saying we're taking our audience, our hearers, our listeners on a journey. We're kind of taking them from where they are to where we want them to be. And you see this across a whole bunch of tactics. So if you think of like a salesperson, for example, it starts with the customer. What are your needs? Let me understand you and the problem that you've got, and then I can sell you this product that will solve that problem. You're not just straight in there with, oh, I've got this thing, do you want it? Well, they might not be interested in it. So let me understand what it is you need, and then I can sell you the right product. If you're managing people, it begins with, okay, what are your needs as my employee? Not, here's what I want you to do, get on and do it. They might then do it for a little bit, but they're not going to enjoy it, and they're not going to carry on doing it for a long time if you're just plowing stuff onto them. You've got to understand their needs and their wants and what makes them tick and how they work best, so that you can then encourage them and move them forwards. And so when it comes to preaching, we've got to start where people are at, understand the needs of the people that we're communicating with, and then we can help move them forwards to where Jesus wants them to be. So we're obviously not salesmen and women, and we're not necessarily managers, at least in the context of this. So if we're speaking to someone and we're thinking about this idea of meeting people's needs, if we're trying to grab someone's attention, what can we do to grab someone's attention? What kind of things will perhaps prick up someone's ears and make them willing to listen to what we've got to say? Yeah. Absolutely. Money, bribery. Something interesting. Body language. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. All of those things. So there's so many different things that can grab people's attention. So you might kind of summarize it in terms of the content of the message that I've got to bring. What might grab your attention? It might be something that's of value to you. That might grab your attention. It might be something that threatens you. So that's like maybe negative grabbing your attention. Or it might be something unique where you've never heard this thing before or you've never seen it shown it or delivered in this kind of way. So of those kind of three different things, which do you think most sounds like Jesus? Value, unique, or threatening? Which method is he using to grab people's attention? Yeah, it's interesting when you read kind of Jesus' messages. So I think he's definitely bringing a unique message in terms of the thing that he's sharing. And people hadn't seen anyone doing the things that he was doing before. But the value that he was bringing to people's lives through the message that he was sharing was probably, at least for me, the thing that was grabbing their attention the most. So it wasn't just the value of what he was sharing, he was valuing those he was sharing it with, which I think is cool. You know, he taught in a way that people understood the value and the benefit of what he had to say. So he wasn't just waffling on, like I sometimes do. He actually had something important to tell, something that was going to benefit the listeners. And they were like, okay, you're saying something that actually might interest me because I could get something out of this, which is kind of maybe a selfish way to think, but it's a really interesting strategy that Jesus was using. He certainly didn't try and threaten them, I don't think.
Not in a way that's like, I mean, like, there was the warning of like...
Oh, absolutely, there were some warnings. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, I understand that for sure. Yeah, there was definitely a balance to it. There's an interesting thing. Because preachers are called to communicate truth, we often mistakenly assume that unbelievers are eager to hear the truth. So we might think, well, I've got this good news and this important news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. It is truth, and it is truth that will bring you from death to life, like we talked about last week. So surely you would want this because it is so important and it is so life-changing and it is so transformative. How could you not want to hear this message? And yet, they often don't. They're often not interested. They're often trying to shun you away and just tell you to be quiet because I don't want to know what it is that you've got to say. In fact, the world that we live in today, people just dismiss the idea of absolute truth. You know, we're here saying we know the truth and the truth will set you free. And they're like, well, that might be your truth, but it's not my truth. And so people, you know, we've got this kind of conflict that we need to work through. In fact, in the world we live in, people value tolerance over truth, don't they? And so that makes communicating about the good news of Jesus really challenging. Because we have to do it in a way that grabs their attention, that demonstrates the benefits of what it is that we're sharing. Jesus said to his disciples, "Look, I'm sending you out as sheep among wolves. So be as shrewd as snakes and as harmless as doves." That's a really interesting, you know, we probably know that verse quite well, but when you apply it to yourself as a person sent into the world to tell people about Jesus, you're being sent amongst wolves, he's saying. So there's going to be conflict. There's going to be pushback. There's going to be some danger in this message that we carry. And so you've got to be shrewd and you've got to be gentle. There's a real balance there between the people and the way in which we bring this message so that people will actually listen to it. So whilst most unbelievers aren't necessarily looking for truth, they are looking often for relief. They might not be looking for truth, but they are looking for relief. And so that gives us the opportunity to interest them in truth. When we can begin with relief, when we can meet their needs and their hurts and their interests first, then we can move them on to, okay, now let me show you the truth. Now let me show you more about Jesus. So when we teach truth that relieves their pain or it solves their problems, then they're more likely to say, all right, that's interesting. What does the rest of the book say? So if we can live and demonstrate and show unconditional love, and we can pray for healing, and we can demonstrate God's goodness and his faithfulness, and we can kind of meet these needs and hurts and interests of people, then they're more likely to be open to hear more of the person of Jesus. As we share biblical principles that meet a need, it creates hunger for more truth. And so I really think that people are interested in the truth, but there might be a barrier there for them actually allowing it in. So if we can begin with their needs and their hurts and their interests and start there at where they're at, then we can kind of break down that barrier that allows us to then bring some truth into their lives. And Jesus got this. Most people who came to Jesus came for relief. They came wanting something from Jesus. They'd heard about this man who was healing the sick, and he was making the blind people see, and he was cleansing lepers and all of this stuff. And so they were like, oh, this man's got something and I can get something from him. Most of them weren't going to him saying, can you teach me more about the Bible? They were just like, you've got something and it will help me. They're kind of being selfish in that. And I think that's probably okay, because we live in a very selfish world. So if we can begin where Jesus began, by meeting their needs in a practical sense, that will then open the door for us bringing in the truth. Ephesians 4, verse 29 says, speak only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Ephesians 4, 29. Speak only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs. So it's again, it's about, okay, what are these people? What are the hearers? What are the listeners? What are the audience that we're speaking to? What do they need? And they're going to be different. You know, Michael at work, or me on the platform, or you on your podcast, or whatever context it might be, that the hearers are going to be different for all of us. And so we've got to be asking the question, what are the people I'm speaking to need? And beginning there, and building them up and encouraging them so that it can benefit them. Who we're speaking to determines what we say. And that applies to everyday conversations as well as, you know, platform preaching and teaching. Who we're speaking to determines what we say. All right, before you prepare a message, you've got to ask the right question. So this is just following on from that. What we might think the right question is to ask is, God, what do you want me to say? But actually what we should probably be asking is, who am I saying it to? And so once we've understood the who, then we can get the revelation of the what. There's my thing in the way. If we can ask the right question from God, God, who is it that you want me to speak to? And once we've understood them, once we understand their needs and their desires and what makes them tick and how we can connect with them, then we can move on to the revelation of what it is that we're sharing. And it also impacts on how we begin. And I think the beginning of any, particularly if we're talking about preaching, the beginning of a preach is really important, because you can kind of grab people's attention or you can lose them from the outset. And if you've lost them from the beginning, it's going to be really hard to pick them back up again as you go down the line. So that initial kind of 2 minutes is actually quite important. And we'll get to that more in one of the later sessions. But if you're speaking primarily to an unchurched group of people, and you get really deep immediately into theology and biblical history, you're probably going to have lost them to the point where when you actually get to some practical application, they're just not listening anymore, and so you might as well not bother. So Charles and Liz, they go to the Well Cafe, which meets on my road on a Wednesday sometimes, and bring a little message. And so Charles has asked me to go and speak, so I'm speaking there tomorrow. And they're mostly unchurched people. Now, I'm used to preaching in a church on Sunday, and our church is mainly people who have grown up in church and are believers. So I rarely preach a gospel message on a Sunday because I'm looking out and I know most people in the room and I know that most people know about Jesus. So tomorrow is a whole different ballgame for me, and it's actually very much out of my comfort zone. So those first few minutes of my message tomorrow are going to be really important, because if I just get too deep too quick, they're just going to switch off. In reality, most of them are only there for a free lunch. And so it's already really hard. So I've got to make sure that the initial kind of intro is really going to grab their attention. So pray for me, because I still don't quite know. I don't quite know what's going to happen. But but it really does. So when you understand who you're speaking to, it really impacts the way in which you begin your message. So maybe ask yourself, what would Jesus do? And what Jesus would do is he would begin with their needs and their hurts and their interests. At least that's what I see when I read the Jesus story. So let's just think for a minute about names of God and how that might help us. So what are some names of God? Just shout out some of the names we have for God. Peace. Yeah. Provider, yeah. Shalom, peace, yeah. Sorry. Shepherd, yeah. So many different names that we have for God. And as we think about Creator, absolutely. And as we think about all these different facets of the person of God, each one of those facets and names are a provision that we can speak about depending on the audience that's listening. So it could be that the people are very much lost and they need a shepherd. Or it might be that we're speaking to people who are anxious and so they need peace. Or it might be that we're speaking to the homeless and they need provision. And so whatever the need is of the audience or the people who are listening to our message, I can guarantee that God has the answer. And it will be covered by one of the names that we speak over him. So that's the beginning of where I see Jesus when he's preaching. So the second thing I want to look at is that Jesus related truth to life. And so for this section, I'm mostly going to be giving you a practical task to do. But when you look at Jesus' teaching, it was really practical and it was really simple. It was clear, it was relevant, it was applicable to the context. So as he's speaking, he's using really everyday language so that people can understand, people can relate, people can connect to him. But his ultimate goal is not just to inform, but to transform. He always wanted them to do something about what it was he was saying. Not just, let me teach at you, but actually, how are you going to use what I've taught in your everyday life? And so Michael mentioned it earlier on, the famous sermon that Jesus preached, the Sermon on the Mount, is just this meaty passage of scripture. And there's a really, I don't know if you've seen The Chosen, but there's a really fun episode where he's getting ready to give the Sermon on the Mount. And I know it's a dramatization of the Bible. It's not real life, but it is really good. And you see him like pacing around, rehearsing bits and writing down notes and trying to get his thoughts in order. And it's really interesting to see. I don't know, because I guess when I read the scriptures, at least how I read it, I was like, oh, well, he's Jesus. He probably just stood there and it just came. But then we see, and we don't know if this is how it happened, but I love the idea of this depiction of he's just an ordinary man and he's trying to gather these revelatory thoughts into a format that would actually make a difference in people's lives. And he's preparing himself and he's getting himself psyched up and ready and he's sharing some thoughts with some of his disciples and getting feedback. I can't remember what episode it was, but it's beautiful. It's really quite cool to see. So I thought what we'd do is just spend a bit of time looking at the Sermon on the Mount. So it's Matthew chapters 5-7. So you could maybe do it in twos or you could do it in your tables. The whole of it, three chapters. quick summary. So what I'd like you to do, in pairs or tables, however you want to do it, is just maybe spend 15 minutes or so, pick out a bit, because it's massive and it's meaty and there's loads of stuff in there. Pick out a portion of the Sermon on the Mount, and then just spend some time unpacking what are the kind of practical applications of the teaching that Jesus is bringing. How is he relating truth to life? So I'm just going to give you quite a bit of time. Yeah, I think, I mean, that preach in itself, you know, is just incredible. The way, you know, he begins, doesn't he, with the Beatitudes. He's talking all about just how we can have a good life. Like, these are some simple, you know, secrets if you want to genuine happiness. These are, you know, this, if you put these things in place, you will be happy. And he's speaking about and challenging us to live an exemplary lifestyle, that actually it's not just about what we say, but it's how we're living. And he's challenging people in that. And I think because it's really interesting, the context of him preaching that sermon is that the audience would have been quite diverse, I suspect, because what we see throughout Scripture is that wherever Jesus was teaching, yes, there was you know, the lost and people who were hungry to receive from God, from Jesus, were there, but also the religious leaders were also there, kind of with this critical mindset, trying to catch him out. And so that's it. And so you see throughout this sermon that actually he's bringing a practical application for those who just want something really simple and that they can grab hold of, and a little kind of bit of meat they can take away. But then he's also challenging the lifestyles of those religious people who think that they've got it all together. And he's actually saying, well, the words that you're saying and the actions that you're living out don't quite match up. And so that's not, you know, what God's teaching. He talks about, yeah, like we've said, things that are still relevant today: controlling our anger, restoring relationships. He talks about giving, about generosity and the way in which we should give. He speaks about praying. He speaks about not being judgy, which I love. And then he just ends, like Michael said, with this story that's, it's really easy to grab hold of, and for people to, and for everyone kind of, you know, in the crowd would have been able to understand what it was that he was saying. And he's like essentially summarizing his whole preach in this one story, saying, okay, I've taught you a whole bunch of stuff, and some of it will have been for you, and some for you, and some for you. But what you need to do is take all of that stuff and put it as the foundation of your life, and then you'll be able to build something that's strong and that lasts. And so I just love how he brings it all together. It's like there's a whole raft of teaching and stuff that we can apply. And so he's being practical throughout his preach, but then at the end, he summarizes it with this story that people remember, because people, you know, I'm going to say it in a minute, but I'll say it now, stories stick. And so he kind of ends with this story that people will remember. Ah, oh, yeah, I remember that the house fell down because the foundation wasn't solid. But it's also supporting the fact that everything I've just taught is your firm foundation. It's just beautiful, isn't it? Just beautiful. So as communicators ourselves, and as we look at this idea that Jesus relates truth to life, it's not enough to simply proclaim Christ is the answer. We must show how he's the answer. Yes, he is our provider. Yes, he is peace. Yes, he is creator. But how do we take that understanding and see it in our lives? We got to join the dots. That's our job as communicators. We need to encourage change. But if we don't encourage change without the practical steps in terms of how we do that, it's just going to create frustration, and it's going to create guilt maybe in people's lives where they're being challenged with behaviors or thoughts or actions. But because you've not given them the tools to change anything, they're just sitting there going, oh, I'm living this terrible life, but I don't know what to do about it. And yet we see Jesus continually going, that's it. Here's something that you're not doing right, and here's what you can do to fix it. And if we just preach the first bit, then we're going to have a lot of frustrated, guilty, hanging their head in shame people that we're speaking with. It's like if you go to the doctors, you don't just want to hear him tell you, ah, yes, you've got a problem. See you later. You're like, well, that's great, but what are we going to do about it? How do I get better? And that's what we need to do when we're communicating the good news of Jesus. Okay, yeah, you've got a problem in whatever it might be, and here's what we can do to get better. Yeah, that's amazing. And I think that's, you know, we talked last week, didn't we, about the Word of God being like a two-edged sword and cutting through to bone and marrow. And when you get to the root of the problem, you find the real issue and then provide the solutions to get better. That's where, you know, our job as communicators and, you know, as believers sharing the good news of Jesus, that's where we can really, you know, step into the fullness of what God's got for us. Absolutely. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. That's really good. D.L. Moody once said, I think I've got it on here, the Bible was not given to increase our knowledge, but to change our lives. And so I think that when we look at Jesus, and we look at his teaching, and we look at his preaching, that he was never just pouring out information and knowledge. He was always looking for transformed, changed lives. That was his ultimate goal, to see people restored to relationship with the Father, to see people forgiven, filled with grace, living a full life. Jesus said, I've come that you may have life, not I've come that you may have rules and religion. It was all about relationship and restoration. And I love that when Jesus preaches and he teaches, he often said, now go and do likewise. There was this challenge. It wasn't even just a, okay, I'm just going to drop this in you. It was a real, okay, now you need to do something. He just spelt it out to them. I'm not just going to share with you this idea and hope that you get the fact that you're supposed to do something. I'm just going to spell it out. Now go and do something about it. There's a real challenge there from Jesus, and I think we can do the same. Okay, I've preached on whatever it might be. If you recognize that in your life, go and do something about it. A real challenge. Absolutely. Fear and trembling. Yeah. We've got to do something about it. We've got to challenge people. And so what I'll say, and I'll probably say it a few times as we go through this course, is when you're preparing a message or a preach or whatever it might look like, you've got to ask yourself, what is it that God wants to say through me? And so what? What is the thing that the hearers need to do about it? Like, yes, I've got something great to say, but so what? What do I then want you to do about it? Because if I can't answer the so what, then there's no point in telling them the what. Then it's just information, it's not transformation. So it's got to be, okay, I've got a revelation from God and I want to impart it to you, but what are you going to do with that? That's the key. That's the key. So we're about to go into a preaching series on miracles. In a couple of weeks' time. And obviously there are a raft of miracles in the Bible. And so, you know, I messaged Joe today and I was like, we're going to do miracles. You pick a miracle you want to speak on. But then I just tagged on my message. She knows it, but I was like, but make sure you're asking yourself, so what? Because, you know, I can tell you and unpack an amazing miracle that Jesus did, but that's great to hear, but what do I do with that? Like, how do I apply Jesus doing a miracle in my life? So maybe, I don't know, maybe this week you want to have a think about that and just pick a miracle and mull over it for a little bit and just think, okay, that's a great thing that Jesus did for that person, but how do I apply that to my life? Or how could I communicate that in a way that gets someone to do something that will help them become more like Jesus? And that's the challenge, I think, when it comes to preaching, because the Bible is full of information, but if it's not going to transform us and make us more like Jesus, then why are we communicating it? So yeah, it's just pushing our thinking a little bit more beyond reading the Bible, which obviously we should all be doing, to actually, okay, this is a great bit of scripture I've just read. Well, what do I do about it? How do I apply it? If we can start doing that in our own personal study, then that then will help us when it comes to creating messages that we can challenge the hearers. You know, okay, this is great. The Bible's full of truth, but what are you going to do with the information that we're sharing? So Jesus began with people's needs and hurts and interests. He related truth to life. And then the third thing I want to just pull out is Jesus spoke with an interesting style. In Mark 12:37, it says, "The large crowd listened to him with delight." That's the NIV translation. They didn't listen to him with fear. He wasn't preaching fire and brimstone to them, but he was preaching joy and he was preaching delight. And they were receiving it in the same way that he was delivering it. And I think that's really interesting, because I don't know if you've ever thought about the way in which Jesus preached. You know, we read the Sermon on the Mount or some of his other messages, but had you ever thought about the charisma of Jesus or his presentation style or, you know, what he was doing with his hands while he's preaching and those kind of things? No, that's it. But I think, you know, like I said earlier, like everywhere he went and whenever he spoke, crowds gathered. And if he was a really dull speaker, they just wouldn't have bothered, would they? They'd be like, "Oh, it's him again. Let's just keep. We'll go find the next priest who's showing something a bit more interesting, who's got a bit of passion to him." You know, he obviously had something about him that was engaging and interesting. Rick Warren said, "When I teach God's word in an uninteresting way, people don't just think I'm boring, but they think God's boring." I mean, that blew me away. I don't know if you've ever sat under a person preaching who is dull. I certainly have. You know, I've sat in a room with someone who literally just read their message and didn't even look up. And it's hard to engage with someone when they're not connecting with you and making eye contact and they're just reading from a page and it's very stale and you can tell that they're, I mean, not that we shouldn't be nervous when we're sharing, but if Jesus was like this for his whole message, people wouldn't have listened to him. So there must have been something about him that was connecting with people on a real level and engaging people. So I think it's just another kind of step forward for us when we think about preaching, is how are we presenting ourselves? How are we kind of breaking down that barrier between us and the hearers, the listeners, so that they will engage? Because if we're not delivering it right, as maybe shallow as it seems, they won't connect with it as well as if we're doing it well. Okay. Isn't it? I start bouncing a little bit and you can see you're like, "Oh, come on, this is like, you know, it's good stuff." And it just kind of passes around the room. Yeah. It's really cool. I love it. So let's just zip through some final things. Does anyone know, or can anyone guess what, at least what I think, Jesus' favorite preaching technique was? What did he love to do when he was preaching? He loved to tell stories. He was the ultimate storyteller. Matthew 13:34, Jesus spoke all these things to the crowds in parables. He didn't say anything to them without using a parable. There's something really powerful about stories. He ended the Sermon on the Mount with a story. We love stories, and it holds our attention. You think about TV and movies and novels. They hold our attention if they're good stories. Stories stir emotion in a way that just reeling off facts and figures and principles could never do. And stories help us to remember, like we've already said. You know, Harvey, I was at the coffee morning on Monday, and Harvey said, because we're looking for a car at the minute, and he's like, "Oh, well, I hope you'll have another good story to tell," because he remembers when I was preaching a few weeks back and I was sharing about the frustration I had buying our last car. I mean, I didn't ask him if he could remember why I was sharing about it, but he remembered the story. And so I think, you know, if we can kind of somehow bring what we're sharing into a story. It will help people to remember it, and it'll help people to kind of feel some of the emotion around the message that we've got to share. So Jesus loved to use stories. We've already said it earlier, but he used really simple language, similarly to what Yvonne was just saying. He didn't use these massive, long words. He wasn't really convoluted in his messages. He wasn't using Christianese and all this jargon that people, you know, often get caught up in. And it's an interesting one. So obviously you'll know that sometimes I bring out some of the original language in my preaching. But I would only ever do a couple of those at most in a message, because if I was just reeling off, you know, Hebrew and Greek, and I mean, I don't even know it that well, so I wouldn't be able to do it particularly well. But if I was just reeling off stuff like that, it'd be like, oh, this is so dull. Unless you're really into like foreign languages or something, it's not going to connect with you. Whereas if we can speak in simple terms that connect with the listeners, and that's why you see Jesus often using like agricultural terminology, because that's how they would relate. And so, you know, we might use conversations around social media or kind of modern day things that help people to connect with what it is that we're talking about. Simple language. And Jesus taught such profound truth, but in really simple terms. And so I think it's important to understand the balance between being deep and having depth to our message versus just muddying the waters. You know, we can feel like, oh, I'm just going to unpack this scripture and I'm going to help you understand the richness of it. But if I'm going into such depths, I'm possibly just churning up a bunch of dirt and you're like, I don't understand what the actual point of what you're saying is, because I'm just churning out all of this, I don't know, deep theological stuff. So it's a bit of a balance, because, you know, like we were talking about last week with topical versus exegesis. Expository, that's the one. Exegesis is the other one. Expository. It's that kind of balance between finding a bit of depth but not getting so deep that we've just lost the clarity of the message. And so Jesus did it beautifully. He just kept it simple. Albert Einstein once said, "You don't really understand something unless you can communicate it in a simple way." I think that's really interesting. So we need to be able to explain something with ease. And if we can't do that, we perhaps haven't quite grasped what it is that we're trying to say. And so yes, we should go through the process of doing our study and digging into the depths ourselves, but we might not bring that to the table. We might just go, okay, I'm going to dig into the old original language and grasp hold of some of the depths behind these words and the meaning of the scriptures so that I understand it enough to then communicate it in a really simple manner. It's finding that balance as well, that simple isn't shallow or simplistic. It's clear and understandable. So it's making sure that we can do that with the messages that we bring. So Jesus began with people's needs, hurts, and interests. He related truth to life, and he spoke with an interesting style. Then I've just got this final concluding statement. Jesus, not anyone else, must be our model. When we preach like he did, we'll see the results he did. And I don't know about you, but that's what I want. To see people saved, to see people healed, to see the blind see, so that the deaf can hear. All of that stuff is what I want to see. And so if we can model our preaching and our teaching and our communicating in the way that Jesus did it, then I believe we'll begin to see the things that he did too.